Great to see everybody this morning. Thank you for being with us. And we have an exciting lineup ahead of us today. We're going to cover everything from economic forecast to our historic Gullah neighborhoods, artificial intelligence and business, as well as the our seafood festival, which we just love and hard to believe it's almost here again. So we've got a lot of ground to cover this morning, and we're going to get started. We're going to kick things off looking at a big perspective, and that's looking at our economy. And joining us for that is our friend and renowned economist, Dr. Joy Von Essen. Dr. Von Essen's with the USCB's Darla Moore School of Business, and he's certainly no stranger to Power Hour, and he's also, his voice is heard and insights are provided to many corporations like Boeing and Michelin, and they certainly rely on his economic outlook as well as many forecasts that he does for the state of South Carolina. Dr. Von Essen, it's great to see you again, and thank you for being with us this morning. We look forward to hopefully good news from you for 2024.
Well, good morning, Bill, and thank you all very much for having me this morning. I'm going to quickly share my screen here. I know we have a full agenda, so I want to go ahead and just jump right in. But again, thank you all for having me this morning. It's great to be here. So we're going to talk over the next few minutes about our outlook for 2024 for the state of South Carolina and the local regions. And as we get started, I want to summarize where we're headed this morning by talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly associated with South Carolina's economy in terms of where we are here in early February of 2024. And they're in order here, these points. So the good news in terms of where we are is that we've seen an economy that continues to be very resilient in terms of steady rates of consumer spending, a very strong labor market. We've seen readjustments of the housing market, strong wage growth. So very resilient activity as we move into 2024, even though we're still going through a major readjustment phase, which I'll come back and talk about in a moment. The bad news is that we do still have headwinds associated with inflation, meaning that the Federal Reserve is going to have to continue to closely monitor where inflation heads in 2024. We'll talk about some of those headwinds that might fight the inflation, or rather fight the Fed on inflation, and make it challenging for the Fed to get us down to 2%, which is their target. And then finally, the ugly, we'll call it, is that even though the likelihood of recession has decreased, again, which is very good news for us this year, we're not out of the woods yet, largely because of these headwinds due to that are fighting the Fed on inflation, which we'll come back and talk about. So the good, the bad, and the ugly. So we'll start with the good and go through a few more specifics on this. And I want to come back to the theme of the South Carolina economy that we will see and that we are seeing in 2024. And that's the theme of readjustment. And you might even call this period since essentially 2020, the great readjustment period, or the great readjustment of the United States and South Carolina's economies. Because we've been facing a period of disequilibrium for the last several years where demand has been far outpacing supply. And we're now in the process of readjusting, getting back to a period of equilibrium, of more balance between supply and demand. And so that's why we call this the Great Readjustment, and why readjustment is going to be a key theme for 2024 that we'll come back to several times this morning. So why has demand been so high? First, we need to look back and understand why this disequilibrium emerged. And basically, it was the result of two factors, driving high demand, which was a rapid rebound of the labor market in 2020 and in 2021 especially. And that was combined with $6 trillion in stimulus, which much of which went directly to consumers, to households, in the form of stimulus checks, in the form of tax credits, and enhanced unemployment insurance benefits, among others. So there were a variety of ways that these dollars were able to get directly to households and put them in very good financial shape. So we can actually see the evidence for this. First of all, looking at employment trends for South Carolina, we see a rapid labor market recovery in the aftermath of the COVID pandemic, and then very steady employment gains ever since. So it's not as if we recovered from the employment losses incurred during the pandemic recession, and then stopped. We've seen very steady and stable employment growth rates ever since. And in fact, our employment growth has been higher over the past 2 years than it was on average over the previous decade. So a very strong labor market recovery and very strong employment trends going into 2024. And in terms of the of households, in terms of how well they've been doing financially, largely because of that labor market recovery and the $6 trillion in stimulus can be observed here, where we can look at the different categories of household assets. And I just draw your attention to the top line there, the financial assets, because that's the biggest category. And you very easily notice basically a bubble there where we saw a surge in financial assets, followed by that surge really tapering off or that bubble deflating beginning in 2021 and going into 2022 as inflation went up. So consumers had access to more financial resources, and then they had to spend those down because prices were rising. So to preserve their level of consumer spending, they had to draw on these additional financial resources since inflation was going up. But the good news here is that financial assets, as you see, are still very much in line with pre-pandemic norms, which suggests that in 2024, we're more likely to continue to see steady and stable rates of consumer spending overall, which is a primary driver of the U.S. economy. So the fact that financial assets remain stable is very, very important. Now, this has had an effect on consumer spending for the last several years, but most of these dollars were spent in the goods market. So when we saw that $6 trillion in stimulus, we saw that labor market recovery, that put consumers in very good financial shape. And those dollars were largely spent in the goods market. Because remember, we were all staying home back in 2020 and 2021. We were socially distanced. So people weren't going to restaurants. They weren't traveling. They were spending these dollars on manufacturing goods. They were spending it on housing. We saw a lot of renovations. We saw the housing market, of course, boom significantly in 2020 and 21. And more generally, we saw what I would call a durable goods bubble emerge. And we are still readjusting from that goods bubble. Again, the theme of this year is readjustment. And so even though the pendulum is swinging back to more of an equilibrium between spending on goods and services, we're still disproportionately spending on the goods market. We're still readjusting. We're still in that process of moving back to pre. We've seen different rates of growth in different regions of South Carolina, this durable goods bubble. So for example, we've seen growth soften over the last year in 2023, and that has largely been largely had the biggest effects in Greenville, Hilton Head, and Myrtle Beach. And that's because these are three markets within South Carolina that are primarily driven by the goods market, at least relative to other regions of South Carolina. So that goods bubble and the readjustment away from the bubble is a way that we can explain the differences in growth rates in South Carolina over the last year. So that's the good news. Steady consumer spending, as we've seen, household financial resources continue to be stabilizing and in overall good shape, which means that we're likely to continue to see spending in the new year. And we also have seen a very healthy labor market. But of course, as I mentioned, that it's not all good news. Unfortunately, we do have some bad news in here as well. And that's that we have seen inflation and rising interest rates really taking their toll on purchasing power. And this is very easy to see. If we look at wage growth and inflation and just compare the two directly, we can see average hourly earnings and the overall inflation rate, the bottom two bars there. And you can see inflation has significantly outpaced wage growth over the past 3 years as a whole, from 2020 to 2023. And this is even more pronounced when we look at specific items that consumers are faced with buying every day. So food prices, energy prices, what we see at the gas pump. So in general, again, you can very clearly see that prices have been rising faster than wages. And this has taken its toll on consumers and on businesses. And this is one reason why we see pictures like this, where despite the fact that inflation has actually seen meaningful progress over the last year and a half or so, consumer sentiment still remains very low, right? And normally you would expect this not to be the case. If the economy is doing well, if inflation has come back down, why is it the case that consumer sentiment remains very low compared to pre-pandemic norms? And one of the major reasons for this is going back to this this loss in purchasing power, wage growth and inflation. Purchasing power has been eroded, and that has affected consumers. And so sentiment is down, even though we've also seen inflation come down over the last year and a half or so. And this is true in the durable goods market as well, as we see this readjustment. Housing markets specifically have reflected the front lines in this ongoing battle against inflation. Because remember, the Fed has been raising interest rates specifically to pull inflation down. And that happens because when interest rates rise, that increases the cost of borrowing money for businesses and consumers. And housing markets typically are hit first and they're hit hardest when interest rates rise. So we see this for durable goods as a whole, or we see a significant effect on the durable goods market as a whole, but particularly for housing. And we can see mortgage interest rates, which have effectively doubled since 2021. You can see current rates are right around 6.6%. And we can also see the clear effect on the housing market, whether we look nationally or locally here in South Carolina. And I would suggest to you that this is just another illustration, basically, of that durable goods bubble that we looked at before, right? Because housing sales, the housing market, is just a subset of the durable goods market as a whole. And you can see the peak in demand in housing sales in 2021. And then in 2022, it begins to taper. Now, the good news here is we are seeing the housing market begin to stabilize, and most of the readjustment period looks as if it is behind us, as you can see at the national level. And we can see that in South Carolina as well. So as we move into 2024, even though we've seen this major readjustment of housing, most of it is likely behind us, which means that the housing market is more likely to see either relatively flat or perhaps slightly positive growth in 2024. And we can also see this for South Carolina as well. Again, the red line here representing total sales, where you can see growth rates are still negative, but not nearly as negative as they were in 2022. Again, we're moving closer to stabilization here, suggesting that growth in 2024 likely to be relatively flat or perhaps slightly positive. Again, this readjustment period for the housing market is largely behind us. And this is happening in other markets too. I focus on housing, but this is happening in manufacturing. And just briefly share with you the ISM Purchasing Managers Index, which is a one metric to gauge the health of the manufacturing industry. And as you can see, it's beginning to stabilize as well after dropping below 50, which represents a contracting manufacturing market. You can see that it's beginning to tick back up. So this readjustment period, again, we're on the backside of it, but still we're in a very much a period of readjustment for the South Carolina and U.S. economy in the goods market. So what does this imply about 2024? A few comments here. The Fed is continuing to walk this tightrope in trying to pull down inflation by raising interest rates, but not to the point that it puts us into a recession. So that's a very fine line. But the good news is we are increasingly optimistic that a soft landing is on track. And I'll go through briefly a few metrics to illustrate why we're increasingly optimistic. First, if we go back to this comparison between inflation and wage growth, what we've seen in 2023 for the first time in May was inflation actually falling below wage growth for the first time in over 2 years, meaning that the steady losses of purchasing power that consumers had been experiencing and that had been building over time, we basically stopped the bleeding, so to speak, in May of 2023. So for the first time, wage growth was above the inflation rate again. Now, that doesn't undo the loss in purchasing power overnight by any means, but it does mean that purchasing power is no longer being eroded and gives us more optimism that we'll continue to see steady rates of consumer spending in 2024. We also see a consistent or consistent data in the labor market that are consistent with a soft landing. The job openings rate has been tapering over the last year and a half or so following the rise in interest rates, again, showing that the labor market is softening a bit, but only these excess job openings that are, again, the job openings rate is still higher than it was before the pandemic began. It's still relatively high, but it's tapering very slowly, right? Because we want to see a slow pullback in economic activity. We don't want to see a major change. And that's consistent with what we're seeing here, consistent with the soft landing, a slowing of the U.S. economy, but still positive growth and a strong labor market overall. And we can see this if we look closer to home in South Carolina. Employment gains have been steady and strong, but again, not quite at the pace that we saw before 2022, a softening of employment gains as a whole. And then finally, interest rates in 2024. This is really the wild card. And so I would suggest that we can think about interest rates in terms of inflation stickiness. In other words, we need to be looking very closely at how sticky inflation is this year to get a sense of what interest rates are likely to do. So if we go back and look at the growth of inflation over the last several years, what you'll notice here is that even though inflation has dropped from 9% to 3.4%, it's really gotten stuck here between 3 and 3.5% in the last several months. And so the question is whether or not it's going to continue to pull back to 2% or whether it will pause and get stuck at right around 3%. And the way to the factors I would suggest that you look at to get a sense of whether it's going to continue to come down are these three here. And what I would call an inflation tug of war is happening, where we see one factor, housing costs, pulling inflation down. Housing costs are a disproportionately large component of inflation, and we've seen them tapering over the last year. But we have two factors moving us in the opposite direction, namely a labor shortage, which is continuing to put upward pressure on prices through increasing wages, and the U.S. movement away from globalization. And that just means that the increased geopolitical uncertainty and the desire of manufacturers to engage in more onshoring following the pandemic is reducing the amount of international trade that we see, and that can put upward pressure on prices as well. So these are the three factors that are basically have us looking at an inflation tug of war in 2024. And these factors are important to watch because that's going to influence whether inflation continues to come down to 2% or whether it gets stuck at around 3%. And that will influence whether the Fed leaves rates higher for longer, which they are likely to do if inflation pauses at around 3%. So just wrapping up, the South Carolina economy did cool in 2023. Slower growth is expected for 2024 as rising interest rates and the ongoing effects of inflation have taken their toll on purchasing power. But our economy does remain relatively healthy. And that's enhanced by the fact that the housing market's readjustment is largely behind us. So we expect possible positive growth in the housing market in 2024. High inflation, still the biggest short-run economic threat. We've talked about that inflation tug of war that's happening this year. And I will leave you with the final bullet point, which is that the odds of a recession have gone down significantly. We are increasingly optimistic that we are going to hit this soft landing in 2024. But the outcome of this period is far from certain. So particularly with respect to inflation, that's the big wild card that's going to be that the Fed's going to be monitoring and that we're going to be tracking this year. So I will stop there. Thank you very much for your attention, and I'll turn it back over to Bill to see if we have any questions.
All right, Dr. Von Essen, thank you, and certainly glad to hear about that our odds are increasing, looking better. That's certainly positive news. We do have some questions for you this morning. Appreciate your willingness to answer those. The first one coming in is coming from Mary. And Mary is asking, how important do you feel the election is when it comes to the economy? What does it traditionally do in an election year?
That's a great question. Normally, we don't see a strong effect in an election year in terms of how it affects economic activity overall. But looking ahead to 2025, I think from a political standpoint, we are likely to see a continued movement, I'll call it towards what we might call America First policies, or moving away from globalization. And that's really a bipartisan movement that we're seeing based on broader global trends and changes in the political dynamic. And we're in a very different market now compared to 10 or 15 years ago, when we were engaged in more open trade, free trade, globalization. That was really the push, again, from both political parties. But now, whether we're talking about a potential increase in tariffs, if we see a Republican administration elected this year, or whether we see more a more push for green energy initiatives on the Democratic side, I think regardless, we're looking more at focused policy on in the United States that is moving us away from what we've seen as globalization and open trade of the where we were about 10 years ago. So it's really a pivot that we're seeing that I think is going to continue regardless of how the election turns out in November.
All right, thank you. Our next question is coming from Michael. And Michael is asking, what needs to happen to drive food prices down?
So I think it really depends on the individual market. In many cases, we are not necessarily going to see prices come down. They're more likely to stabilize at current levels. So when inflation comes down from 9% to 3%, for example, that doesn't mean that prices are decreasing. It just means that they're not rising as fast. And that's what we're going to likely see in most markets, where the rate of price increase continues to drop. But I think if we look at most goods, we typically don't see as a whole, we're not going to see prices come down. It's more that they're going to stabilize. And in terms of individual items, yes, we could see, if, for example, the price of commodities change, those can come down. So if grain comes down, for example, that can impact the price of bread. But in general, we're expecting prices to stabilize as opposed to actually coming down.
All right. Next question is coming from Tara. And Tara is asking about, do you foresee any lessening in the workforce availability?
Lessening in work, you mean in terms of job availability?
Yes.
So I think we talk about from a job perspective and then from a worker perspective. So from a job perspective, yes, the labor market has been softening over the last year. We don't see as many job openings. We have seen hiring, even though it's still positive, we're still seeing strong employment gains month to month. It's not quite as strong. It hasn't been quite as strong in 2023 as it was in 2022 and 2021. I think that's likely to continue, particularly if the Fed continues to leave interest rates high. So we should continue to see that labor market cool a bit. But from a worker perspective, the labor shortage that we see, that is likely to be a persistent challenge, particularly in South Carolina, I think, for the foreseeable future across all industries. And that's because the labor shortage that has emerged is largely a demographic shift or demographic change that we've been seeing, meaning that baby boomers are retiring in increasing numbers. We're seeing an aging of the population, and the lower labor force participation that we see today compared to 2019, for example, is exclusively the result of a decline in labor force participation of people over the age of 55, meaning that people are working as much as they ever have been. If they're under 55, those rates of labor force participation are still strong, but those over 55 have really come down, and that's not likely to change. So that's going to create a bottleneck, I think, on growth for the next several years. So the labor shortage is going to be with us for a while.
The last question that we have time for this morning is coming from Barbara, and Barbara is asking for you just to touch a little bit more on the South Carolina housing situation, if you would, please.
Sure. Well, I think housing, like any other market, really comes down to supply and demand. And what we've seen in South Carolina, so we can look at it from, well, let's look at it from a sales perspective and then from a pricing perspective. So on the sales side, we've seen a major pullback. And that has been in excess of a 20% decline in sales in most markets in South Carolina in 2022. But in 2023, the decline in sales was around 5% in most markets, again, on average. So sales activity has pulled back significantly, but it's leveling out, meaning that that readjustment that we talked about before is largely behind us. So total housing market sales is stabilizing at roughly where we were in 2019. And that's actually a good thing, because the high levels of demand that we saw in 2020 and 2021 were not sustainable and not comparable to the growth patterns we had seen over the last decade. So what we've seen in the last 2 years is that readjustment back to back closer to normal, to what we want to see, to a healthy housing market where we will see slow and steady rates of growth really beginning in 2024. So that's on the sales side. On the pricing side, however, prices are continuing to rise. We've seen some tapering in the growth rate of prices, but they're still growing. So they're still increasing, just not as much as they had been. And the reason they're still going up, despite the fact that we've seen this double-digit decline in sales, is because we are still facing a significant inventory challenge in most markets across the state. And so as a result, that's keeping upward pressure on prices, despite the fact that we're seeing these decline in sales. And that's the result both of a decade-long period of underbuilding. So we've had inventory challenges in South Carolina, really going back to before the pandemic began. But that was exacerbated even further when mortgage interest rates rose in the last year. And that made existing inventory go down, because now existing homeowners, who were in many cases locked into a 3 or 4% mortgage interest rate to move, now they're going to have to bump up to a 6 or 7% mortgage interest rate. And so that really deters a lot of existing homeowners from wanting to move. And so that makes that inventory challenge even worse. So that's what we're seeing today. But I think going into 2024, again, more stabilization because we have largely readjusted away from that mini bubble that emerged. So I think growth in the housing market this year likely to be relatively flat, or as I said, perhaps slightly positive, just depending on what interest rates do.
Dr. Von Essen, great to see you again. While I was sitting here, had several messages coming in from listeners saying thank you. They always appreciate you being on and find great value with it. So again, we appreciate your support and thanks for tuning in with us this morning.
It's my pleasure, Bill. It's always great to be with you, and thank you again.
We'll see you soon. All right, Dr. Joy Von Essen, always great hearing from him. We'll transition now to on the local front. And you may be aware that the town of Hilton Head Island recently hired its first executive director for the newly formed Gullah Geechee Historic Neighborhood Community Development Corporation. Now, that's a lot for a business card. We're proud and pleased to have with us today Thomas Boxley. He's joining us this morning to talk about his new role as the executive director and his vision for the group. A little bit about Thomas. He hails from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And coming from Tulsa, he certainly brings a wealth of experience, spending more than 20 years there in community development and outreach, business expansion, fundraising, and much, much more. Thomas, we're glad to welcome you to Power Hour this morning. We're glad to have you on Hilton Head Island and looking forward to big things ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And good morning. It is a pleasure to be here and share a bit about the Gullah Geechee Historic Neighborhoods Community Development Corporation and what we have been working towards since our founding in 2023. We're a very new organization. Again, we were founded in 2023, organized by the town of Hilton Head Island, and we have a specific charge here on Hilton Head Island, which is to sustain and preserve the culturally sensitive Gullah neighborhoods here on Hilton Head Island. There are specifically 12 Gullah neighborhoods that are historic areas on the island of Hilton Head. And as we heard from Dr. Von Nessen, there are several factors that impact the traditional Gullah community here on Hilton Head Island. Some of those are housing, some of those are workforce. And part of our mission as a community development corporation is to work and preserve the neighborhoods, but also to preserve employment opportunities and opportunities for land ownership. As we heard, the cost of housing is an issue here, specifically on Hilton Head Island. So what I'd like to do is share a little bit about the history of the Community Development Corporation, what we're currently working on, and things that we'll be working on as we move forward. Again, very young entity. I arrived here in November of 2023 and immediately began working within the Gullah community to get a deeper level of understanding of the history, for one, and for two, to get an understanding of what the actual needs might be. In November, we embarked upon a strategic planning exercise to further define and inform the work that we will embark upon over the next 2 years. It's very important as a very young entity that we work to stabilize. And so this 2 year period that will be informed by our current strategic planning process will seek to provide that level of stability as we look to move forward. Some of the things that that we have been able to identify as areas of need in the community, again, are housing. And then when we look at the amount of tourism dollars that are generated here on Hilton Head Island, we also look at means by which the Gullah community can participate in the tourism industry. So we look at business development as a need. We also look at the continued growth of hospitality type services. So when we embarked upon our strategic planning effort, our strategic goals that have been identified are one, to ensure the stabilization and preservation of Gullah Geechee neighborhoods, cultural sites, and history. There are several entities here on the island that that we're able to lean upon, the Hilton Head Bluffton Chamber of Commerce being one, as we look to increase tourism traffic to traditional Gullah neighborhoods and sites. So part of that, part of what we'll be leaning into and partnering with the Chamber of Commerce is related to the cultural tourism. I don't know how many people that are viewing or how many people on this call have had an opportunity to participate in the Gullah tours, but it's a very, very culturally rich opportunity to learn more about the rich history that is the Gullah culture. We are currently, February is Gullah Heritage Month, and so there are a slate of activities that are taking place in the month of February that are very, very enriching when it comes to learning more about Gullah history. So part of what we want to do as the Community Development Corporation is to provide and enhance those opportunities for people to learn more about Gullah history. Also, along the lines of preserving the neighborhoods, what we really want to work towards is making sure that there are opportunities for Gullah people to maintain property ownership. That's very important as we look at economic development and the ability for people to utilize their property to generate revenue. So preserving property ownership as part of that stabilization and preservation of Gullah neighborhoods. Our second goal is to educate and maintain strategic partnerships that will enhance and support the work of the Community Development Corporation. And so by educating people, community partners, what we want to do is make sure that they understand, for one, that we are here because we are a very new entity, a very new organization, and also to reach out and develop those strategic partnerships, whether we're talking about the resources available through our partnership with the Chamber or the other various entities within the Lowcountry, such as the Lowcountry, the Community Foundation of the Lowcountry, other several entities here that have been doing good work in the community. But we want to make sure that they are aware, one, that we are here, and two, of the specific nature of the work that we are doing to sustain and preserve Gullah history and neighborhoods. Our third strategic goal is to make sure that the community is aware that we are here, and making sure that there are opportunities for partnership with community-based organizations. And what that means is that we are here to support the existing entities, such as the Native Island Community, the Native Island Business and Community Coalition, to enhance the services that they have been providing over the years. There are other entities that we also support and partner with to continue to push forward the historic nature of the Gullah community. Another one of our goals, our goal number four, is to increase access to capital and financial education. So part of what we will be doing is raising funds to support business growth and development. We have been partnering, again, through the Chamber of Commerce with the Gullah Business Coalition. And these are very new partnerships, but we're partnering to leverage the resources that we are able to bring to the table for a small business startup that is specific to the Gullah community. So, for example, as we look at moving forward with cultural tourism, we'd like to be able for our average tourist to have an opportunity to have places to shop that are distinctly Gullah, places to eat that are distinctly Gullah. So these are pieces that will contribute to our economy in the Gullah communities. And business growth, of course, is something that that is important as we look to the future of the sustainability aspect of the Gullah communities, allowing people to work within the community that they grew up. And so along those lines, our fifth strategic goal, supporting training opportunities and employment opportunities for Gullah youth. And what that would involve is to work with our young people in high school and try to provide opportunities, whether that is with the town of Hilton Head or with some of our partner organizations, to identify career pathways for young people so that as they matriculate through high school and through trade school, technical school, college, higher education, that we provide opportunities for them to, should they choose to come back and live on Hilton Head Island, that one, there are employment opportunities. And then kind of circling back to our first goal, which is the stabilization and preservation of the neighborhoods and housing, so that two, they have the opportunity to live here on Hilton Head Island. So those are that's an overview of our goals. And what we have been working on since November feels like a whirlwind 3 months. And then what we're looking forward to in the future. For one, I'd like to make everyone viewing and those on the call aware that we meet monthly on the third Wednesday of the month. Generally, our meetings are held at 10 a.m. at Town Hall. And so that's an opportunity for members of the community to come and see and hear the work that we are embarking upon on a monthly basis. Two, we'll be wrapping up our strategic plan adoption process here in the month of February. And we'll also be working with our community organizations to identify those particular businesses that we could potentially support as we move forward. Another piece that we'll be working diligently on is housing. As you heard from Dr. Van Nessen, housing is something that that is a significant issue here on Hilton Head Island. We're specifically looking at how do we provide opportunities for Gullah natives to live on the island as they return from careers or as they age out of, or excuse me, as they graduate from college and want to return home. How do we provide opportunities that are affordable for first-time home buyers and young people as they work to embark upon their professional careers? Those are a couple of our immediate term objectives. And as we move forward beyond that, part of what we'll be looking to do as well is to continue to grow economic opportunities for Gullah people. Now, what does that look like? That looks like us as a community development corporation continuing to partner with entities in the South Carolina Lowcountry region to provide employment opportunities, as well as provide funding for entrepreneurs. Those are some of the pieces that early on the community has identified as important goals for us to accomplish. I'll put a pin right there and ask if there are any questions for me as we move through the agenda for today.
Thomas, thank you. Your first 3 months have obviously been a sprint, and a lot has been accomplished in a short amount of time. Congratulations on that.
And a lot of work to do, Bill.
There you go. The couple other things. Yes, first of all, I'd like to also say thank you to you for participating and be a part of our Gullah Geechee Business Coalition. And I think through that partnership and working with you and your group and others that we're going to be able to move forward and do great things together. So we appreciate your support on that. First question is coming in from Roger. And Roger's asking about if there are any grants available to assist local Gullah business development through the coalition or any other entities that are out there.
Thank you for that question, Roger. We will at some point in the future be looking at the opportunity for grant making. That will be determined by the finalization of our strategic plan. So those are some of the things that we are finalizing and wrapping up over the next 30 days. And we should have more information to come. However, part of what the Community Development Corporation will be doing is seeking out opportunities, whether that is through the state of South Carolina or federally, for us to support small businesses through grant making. So stay tuned, more to come on that.
Thomas, could you talk for just a minute about since your arrival and how you've been putting the effort forth to meet with all the local landowners and having conversations with them and how that's helping shape the program?
Yes, absolutely. Since arriving, one of the pieces that has become very, very obvious and apparent is the expansion of William Hilton Parkway. And so I've had the opportunity to have living room and front yard conversations with property owners along the William Hilton Parkway corridor and discussing with them the history, for one, of you know, land ownership and the time before 1958 before the highway was in existence, and what the landscape looked like in the Stony neighborhood, and also talking with families about what they would like to see moving forward as a result of the increased traffic, mitigation strategies. How might the county and the state Department of Transportation appropriately mitigate any type of right-of-way acquisition that that is borne by the residents of the Stony community? And from what I have learned through my conversation, the Stony area was quite the economic driver prior to the bridge being constructed. And even in the years, in the immediate years following. And so what a lot of the residents there in the community would like to see is a return of economic activity there along that Stony corridor that is specifically geared towards Gullah heritage and culture. And so so that represents a significant opportunity for the Community Development Corporation to work in the Stony community in the immediate future as we look at mitigation and mitigation strategies for the William Hilton Parkway expansion.
Thomas, thank you for your update this morning. We're delighted you're here, and we're delighted to be able to work with you and looking forward to, again, to really good things ahead.
My pleasure, and I look forward to coming back at some point in the near future as we continue to develop our plan.
We'll certainly make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Thomas Boxley, great talking with him this morning. We're going to focus now, turn to the Hilton Head Island Seafood Festival. And, you know, this Hilton Head Island Seafood Festival isn't just about wonderful seafood. It's also about great work and the significant contributions it makes to charity. Since its inception back in 2003, the David M. Carmines Foundation, initiated by the Carmines family, has been enriching the lives of islanders and supporting charities through the festival. And now in its 17th year, and I know Andrew will find that hard to believe, but in its 17th year, the festival continues just to make a huge impact on our community. And here to tell us about that, this year's festivities and other things, is none other than Andrew Carmines, who's the president of Hudson Seafood on the Docks, as well as the Shell Ring Oyster Company. Andrew, welcome. Yeah. Always great to see you. And it's almost time. One of the great, exciting times on Hilton Head.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day, they said, are you ready for the seafood festival? And I said, no, but I will be when we get there. Just want to say thanks to the first two presenters. What an amazing job they both did. We have a great thing coming up. So we've had a lot of success over the years. You know, my parents started this thing back in 2002, after my brother passed away from a long bout with cancer. And it started as just a gathering of friends and family and others in the parking lot at Hudson's for a kayak event to honor my brother. And over the years, we've grown it into a week-long culinary celebration that kind of brings in chefs from all over the country. Last year, we had two current James Beard Award-winning chefs in town, among others. And this year we have one of those James Beard Award winners coming back, along with a host of other amazing talents from all over the country. So we're very excited. We've seen a big jump in ticket sales in the last couple of weeks, but we still have lots of tickets available for our big event on Saturday, which is back at Honeyhorn Plantation. We went away from Honeyhorn for 2 years and we're at Shelter Cove Harbor, but Saturday is going to be back at Honeyhorn. Super family friendly. We're expecting about 5,000 people for that day. And, you know, there'll be lots of stuff for the kids. There's going to be kids cooking classes. There's going to be food from over 20 local restaurants and restaurants visiting from out of town. Really funky live band, about, I think it's a 12-piece band with all the brass and all that good stuff. So really exciting stuff. And again, we have lots of tickets available for Saturday. If anybody's on this Zoom that is a service-minded individual, please volunteer for Saturday. We could use a lot of help with selling merchandise, selling soft beverages, water, Coca-Colas, things like that. It's only a 3.5-hour shift. And the great thing about that is you can just volunteer online. It's HiltonHeadSeafoodFestival.com. And it's a great way to meet people if you're new to the area. And, you know, you want to come to the event, but maybe you don't have somebody to go with, or you've got, you know, teenage kids that need a punishment. You can always volunteer them too. We'd love to have them. We're just very excited for Saturday. It's kind of a homecoming for us. We kind of pared that event down and made it smaller because of the pandemic. And now we're kind of going full speed ahead. I know a lot of residents have kind of said, hey, well, when are you going to bring the kids back for Saturday? And when's it going to be more family friendly? Well, they got their wish this year. So we're going to make it a big, big to do for the family on Saturday. That's from 1 to 4:30 p.m., by the way, Saturday at Honeyhorn. We've got Friday night, unfortunately, for those of you that have been to that event before. Hopefully you got your tickets because that one's sold out. Thursday night at the Omni is sold out as well. That's our Zero Forks event, just a really fun sort of walk around event. We have plenty of tickets left for the excursions, which are done by my cousin Christopher. He'll basically take groups of 12 people out from Hudson's, and he'll take them out and throw the cast net for shrimp, pick oysters, clams, talk about the local ecosystem. And then they bring all that food back to the restaurant and we supplement, obviously, but we serve four or five courses, and you get a beer included with that. And that's been one of the most popular tickets over the years. The only reason why it hasn't sold out thus far is because we didn't put it up with there was a glitch on the website, and those tickets didn't go on sale until just a couple of weeks ago. So if you're looking to get out on the water the last week in February, that's a great way to do it. You know, a lot of people look at this as, and hopefully we get the weather to cooperate, but a lot of people look at this as kind of, you know, the first big weekend of the year. And what better way to get out in the area and out in nature than to go out with Christopher Shoemaker and May River Excursions for those events. We have just a couple of tickets left for our Holy Mole and Olea. This is Chef Fernando Olea and Chef Tim Nelson. Fernando won the James Beard Award in 2022 for his restaurant Sazon in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And we did this event last year, and I was there. And I want to tell you, this guy, Fernando and Tim, do such a wonderful job. Fernando is known for his moles, which, if you're not familiar with mole, sometimes they can have 26, 27 ingredients and take several days to make. And these are just some of the most rich sauces in Mexican cuisine. And this guy is a total master, and just such an honor to have him in town. You know, one of the great things about this event that is kind of a unintended consequence of doing something like this is, you know, the local chefs that get to work with these chefs that are winning James Beard Awards are getting to see kind of what's on the cutting edge of the culinary world. And it's just a great cross-pollination of ideas and just an amazing experience for a lot of these guys. And we have another pop-up that unfortunately sold out at Alexander's on Thursday, but Wednesday, Holy Tequila. If you haven't gotten your tickets for that and you love really great food, that would be a great one to buy. We also have a new brunch event on Sunday, and it's something that we've never done before. We're partnering with Lincoln and South Brewery, and it's at their facility, and we're calling it Kegs and Eggs. And it'll be a beer-centered event, but Chef Robert Owens, who's been helping us with the Seafood Festival for years out of Atlanta, he is doing the savory elements, and then we have the executive chef from the Grove Park Inn, the executive pastry chef from the Grove Park Inn is going to do all of the sweet items on the menu. So it is a no-frills, casual breakfast event for Sunday, Kegs and Eggs at Lincoln and South Brewery. I am definitely going to pop in for that. I guess Robert's making a couple of sausages from scratch. The pastry chef from the Grove Park Inn is top tier in the world. So something to think about if you're looking for a Sunday event. Hudson's will also be open. And Hudson's is also hiring, by the way. I thought I'd throw that shameless plug in. But Hudson's is also open for brunch on Sunday. So if you can't get a ticket to Kegs and Eggs, you can always stop by Hudson's. You don't need a ticket. First come, first serve, as usual, at Hudson's on Sunday. Trying to think if I'm missing anything. We have a Meet the Maker event on Monday to kick everything off at the Coastal Discovery Museum. I'll be there shucking our oysters that we've grown, our shell ring oysters. And we're walking through the coral reef exhibit, which if you haven't seen that at the Coastal Discovery Museum, it's absolutely incredible. Again, just to go over the schedule in case I didn't touch on it, we're talking about the last full week in February, which I'm pulling my calendar up here, is the 19th through the 25th. So all these events are that week. And we're just super excited and want to also thank all of the community for the support over the years. Important to note, guys, that every penny that we raise from this festival is donated right back into the community. In the last 15 years, we've donated over $2 million to local nonprofits. You know, anybody, any nonprofit that has makes Hilton Head a better place to live, work, and enjoy. Anything from after school programs for kids that's families work in the hospitality sector and are unable to pick them up, or they don't have the resources for after school programs for their kids. We support the Island Rec Center Scholarship Fund. We support the Coastal Discovery Museum, Volunteers in Medicine, the Children's Center, Coastal Conservation League, Port Royal Sound Foundation. So that's kind of our environmental side. So all of the money that you spend, if you go to any of these events at the Seafood Festival, is all going to improve and make Hilton Head a better place to live. So thank you. And thank you guys for your time. And I'll now open it up for any questions.
All right, Andrew, thank you. Wow, what a fabulous week it's going to be. It's exciting that it's almost here. And then congratulations to your parents and you, and you think about that $2 million that's been raised over the course of 15 years and the difference it's made in lives and the lives that it's changed, and just what a valuable asset it is for Hilton Head Island. So from all of us, thank you for your leadership, all your volunteers that make it happen. And I guess we should remind everyone that HiltonHeadSeafoodFestival.com is where people need to go to sign up to volunteer.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Bill. I just want to say too, you know, that number, the 2 million, is a little bit skewed as well, because you know, over it, we're doing so much better now than we were 15 years ago. You know, 15 years ago, we might have donated $15,000 to a local nonprofit in a one-year cycle. And now we're well above that. So a testament to our community and how service-oriented it is. And just honored to be a part of it and hopefully leave it better than we found it. So thank you for your kind words.
You're certainly doing that. That $2 million is a big number, and look forward to watching it grow this year. So thanks for being with us. And again, Andrew, we appreciate you and all you do.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. Andrew Carmines and talking all things Hilton Head Island Seafood Festival. To close it out today, we're going to talk a little bit about artificial intelligence. You know, it's a topic that's top of mind these days and one that's very, very important to business. And our next speaker is going to give us a little bit of a sneak preview into its potential. Next week, he'll be with us for the Chamber's AI forum that we'll be hosting. And it's going to help you understand better how to leverage it for your business and other areas. So now I'm happy to introduce to you Jordan Crenshaw. And Jordan is the Senior Vice President with U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And just like all of his colleagues, they do a super job. And welcome. Thank you. Give us a little bit of, I guess we'll call it an appetite after we've been talking about the Seafood Festival, but what people can expect when they hear you at the upcoming AI Forum.
Well, Bill, thank you. And looking forward to joining you all next week. I think, you know, one of the things we're going to really talk about is that AI wasn't just invented this year or last year, that companies have been using it actually for a pretty long time, but we're starting to see it used in new ways with things like generative AI. And one of the things that I think is going to be really interesting, we're going to talk a little bit about, is how AI is not just for big companies and it's not just for big tech companies, but small businesses are leveraging it to succeed and compete. And we've got some really interesting and great data about how small businesses that are already using AI are actually doing better in terms of their profitability and competing against larger companies. So yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about you know, how small businesses can use it, how they're already using it, and some of the other really societally beneficial and impactful uses that we're seeing in places like health and manufacturing and all different types of industries. So AI is for all businesses, but in particular, it's going to help small businesses quite a bit.
Well, thank you. Yes. So looking at the makeup and what how it can help small businesses is certainly something that, that our members have, are very, very interested in. And talk just a little bit before I let you go here on, you mentioned it's something that's not just new this year, which we know, but talk a little bit about how far AI goes back and then how it has really come to light in the last 12 to 24 months.
Sure. You know, AI has gone back for decades, actually, with machine learning and more specific uses of the technology. So, for example, you know, if you're using Siri or Alexa to make an order, that is through AI. If you're actually using, you know, say you're an influencer and you're taking photos of some place on the beach to try to get your business, you know, more looks on social media. The photo editing tools that are out there that you can use to just get a little bit of a pop are artificial intelligence. So a lot of really cool use cases have already come before, but I think what we've really experienced in the last year is generative AI, which can do multiple tasks outside of just more specific ones. And these are the ones that I think are going to be a real advantage giver to small businesses going forward.
After hearing Andrew talk there about the Hilton Head Seafood Festival, I guess we probably should have scheduled this right around that time so you could have enjoyed both of them, enjoyed a little bit of the island and the seafood while you're here. But we're certainly looking forward to having you next week.
I'm looking forward to it. Always good to be in South Carolina.
All right. So just to make sure everyone knows, the event's next Wednesday at 8:30 in Bluffton. So there's a place you can sign up if you haven't signed up yet. The seats are filling up quickly, and we know it's going to be a really, really good forum. Thanks for dialing in this morning. Thank you for being with us. We look forward to an amazing event next week, and have a great rest of your week. Thanks for your support of the community and your Hilton Head Island Bluffton Chamber of Commerce. Have a great day.